All right, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Thanks for your calls and comments coming in. I'll get to those very, very shortly. just was informed there very recently. As you would know, there is an ongoing review of NowDoc services here in County Donegal. CareDoc seemingly want to make some changes. But what I was told, and obviously it's hard to get information, but what I was told is that NowDoc is being asked to, or choosing to, or being asked to, is my understanding, to move out of its current premises in Letterkenny and to relocate elsewhere. Now, obviously, I'm trying to ascertain. My information was they might be moving to the Kilmacrenan Road, but we're trying to ascertain why that's happening. And is it part of the overall review or just something that was going to happen in any case? But as I say, it can be hard to get information. Right. We are joined now on the programme by author of Money Doctor 2023. Money Doctors, in fact. John Lowe. Good morning, John. Can you hear me, John? No, John is connecting to audio there. Okay, he'll be with us shortly, I'm sure. He'll be joining us just in a couple of moments. If you have any questions for our Money Doctor, feel free to get in touch, 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000. By the way, Greg says, a caller, on a lighter note, are you not going to mention that tonight is Burns Night, the annual celebration of the life and work of Rabbi Burns, the National Bard of Scotland? Burns Night is celebrated by many people across County Donegal, especially East Donegal and Inishowen, and across much of the rest of Ulster. It's always a bit of light-hearted crack at the end of January. That comes in from Sen in St. Johnston. Well, thanks to you, Sen, I was able to mention it. I wasn't aware beforehand. John Lowe, can you hear me okay? No, we are struggling to hear John, or John's struggling to hear us, so we might have to find some alternative way to speak to John for the time being. Well spoken, Fiona. A person after my own heart. A great grandparent. Great show, Greg. A daily listener. Thanks for your nice comment. And more coming in on homework. Homework. No wonder children are confused and anxious. All this discussion is so unnecessary and overcomplicated. If parents include homework in the evening routine, it would be over with and part of the child's structure. A caller says, in other parts of the world, example Taiwan, children are in class from 8 a.m. and then they don't finish until 6. Another, I agree that the homework for smaller children should be small, but we should still give them that. It's more than just academic education. There is a significant and noticeable decline in coping skills, as it is for young people who are entering the workforce, dealing with authority and instruction in recent years. I wonder if this is a direct result of the lack of faith we have in young people's abilities and our constant need as educators and parents to take all of their autonomy away from them. Yeah, I would have some concerns there in that what we're doing at the moment is not working, because we're seeing record rates of of children with mental illness and self-harm. And then, as I say, you know, there can be some difficulties with some of our younger people too when they go on to college and having to fend for themselves. And then, of course, having to enter the workforce too. Maybe if they're overprotected, how well will they function in that environment? So I think it has to be part of a wider conversation as well. Right, okay, we can say good morning now to John Lowe, the Money Doctor. Hi, John.
Good morning, Greg, and happy new year to you and the listeners.
And same to you. Hard to believe you're on the 2023 edition of your big yellow book.
The big yellow book. Yeah, the 18th edition. And it is bigger this year because there's an extra 148 pages with a separate index, Greg. It's called Teenagers, You and Your Money. And essentially, this came about as a result of my son when he was 19. And he never failed an exam in his life. And he was in UCD doing BNL, and he went on to do masters and finance, and then became a chartered accountant, all the usual, never failed an exam. And he said, Dad, what's an overdraft? And I said, there's really something wrong with the educational system, that you can go right through college and, you know, school, and then you come up with a question like that. So this book is actually going to be available for free next September, ebook, to every single TY student in Ireland, including all up in Donegal and the surrounding area. So about 60,000 students.
Yeah, but those buying the big book get access to that now. Is that correct?
Yes, you can. The physical is available now in the Easons. It's actually selling very well. In fact, I'm nearly forced to have to do a reprint. It does very well every year. It's probably the only personal finance A to Z book that you can get on the market. Colm Rappel was a very, very nice man who had a really good book, and actually it would have inspired me to compete with him because it was called Family Finance. But when he sadly died about 5 years ago, his family decided not to continue with the book, so it died with him, sadly.
Do you find that there is more demand on your book? And I think over 18 years, you will have seen we've seen ups and downs in terms of finance and people's well-being. Like with things tighter now, do you think people are more inclined to invest the money in your book as a way of looking after the money, controlling their money, and even saving money?
Absolutely right, because this is a really funny old time that we're living through, increased interest rates, energy crisis, inflation, you name it, we're suffering this. And there's a lot of families out there who are wondering where the next meal is going to come from, let alone where the wages are coming from. And what the book does essentially is it teaches you how to manage your money on a much better basis. And this is actually a brilliant time of the year, Greg, to start considering doing a budget. And just for the year, once a year you need to do this. Mm. But I'll give a...
Before you get into that, though, you see, I think you're right, OK? But do you know those of us who resist changing electricity suppliers, who resist changing car insurance, that we're brand loyal or for whatever reason, or we don't hassle? Like, and I was more guilty of that than I am now. We are the people less inclined to do a budget, because if we can't make a phone call or go on the internet and save, like my insurance quote this year, I might as well just be completely upfront and honest as I always like to be, was 670 was the renewal. And it's 400.
That's a car insurance.
$470. By shopping around, we've managed to get it down to €470. That's a 200 saving off the bat, right?
That's brilliant.
Yeah. Which is massive. But 2-3 years ago, I wouldn't have. And it's not because I'm loaded, John. I just wouldn't have believed there was a saving, or I couldn't have been bothered. And then I wonder, if I couldn't be bothered to save myself £200, could I be bothered to make out a budget? So people like me, and maybe even those behind me on the journey, we need to get our head in a space, don't we, John?
There's three words: apathy, lack of time, and ignorance. Those three words are crucial, actually, when it comes to finances, because people use them all. And, as you say, not so much you couldn't be bothered, but you've got other more important things to do. And you just don't get the time to do it. And then the ignorance that you don't know is sometimes that you can actually save huge sums of money. I maintain that if you spend 2 hours on your own finances every month, you will save an absolute fortune. An absolute fortune.
Well, in the first 3 weeks of this year, I've saved €500 between house insurance and car insurance. Now, house insurance, I had it completely undervalued to rebuild the house. I had this notional view in my head of how much I might sell my house for if I ever sold it. And that's, I think, what I had it insured for. But your insurance is to rebuild, refurnish, put furniture back in, put the tellies back in.
Yeah.
I had my house grossly underinsured, but I ended up insuring it for the right amount for significantly less, and the same as I mentioned there with the car insurance, John.
Well, that was actually dangerous, Greg, if you underinsured.
100%.
Because it not means, say you had insured it for 400,000, but it was actually worth 800,000, and then your house burns down. You'll only get 200,000, not 400,000, because it's the way they work with the insurance. It's on a basis that you get half of what you actually insured it for, and it should have been insured for 800. So that's a very dangerous thing. So I would actually applaud you for, like, first of all, realizing it and then doing something about it.
Right. So, John, budget then. What is the advantage of budgeting?
Okay, it's really important, in my view, to know how much does it cost you to run your life on a monthly basis, because that is the essence of planning. Planning is all about, I'll just tell you this, if you have children and you're getting your €140 child benefit every month, from the time the child was born to the time it stops, which is the 18th birthday, you will have accumulated, without any interest, €28,560. Virtually no family in Ireland can afford to actually put money away for their child for their third level education. But if you could, you are still 14,000 shy of sending that same child to third level, because it costs about 42,000 to send one child to third level. So, you know, if you told the average family, by the way, your children are going to aspire to go into third level, do you know it's going to cost them 42,000 each? They'd have nightmares. So it is basically all about planning. If you start, you know, maybe at that age of 5 or 6 and start planning, maybe putting 100 away a month, and if you can put 100 away a month, then you're now starting to get into the planning kind of arena. And I think that's why budgeting is so important, because you have all the categories, and you be truthful to yourself, you put them all down, and at the end of the day, if your expenditure every month exceeds your income, you've got three choices.
Yeah.
Earn more, cut costs, or prioritise.
And I wonder too, John, how many people who, Ulster Bank customers listening to this, were switching banks and discovered 2, 3, 4 direct debits, the old insurance policies for a phone that they had 7 years ago, or whatever it might be, a double payment to Amazon because they tried to book something or buy something off the US store and didn't realise they were resubs. You know, these examples, I wonder how many people have actually had, without being forced to because of switching banks, have actually looked at their bank account and see what's going out. How much is it per month versus what's going in? Something as simple as that.
This is what I'm saying about the 2 hours a month, Greg. You know, that kind of thing will come up, because what you're going to do with those 2 hours, you're going to actually check your statement, your bank statement, or go through your phone or your laptop and see, you know, what transactions occurred on your account. And then you say, what is that payment there for? And that's how you'd find out. But yes, you're absolutely right with the kind of the loss of Ulster Bank and KBC. People have started to kind of open their eyes about, and there's good news about Revolut yesterday, where they're now getting an IBAN number for Irish kind of account holders.
Well, but just on that, though, on that, the media was reporting that now you could get your wages paid into Revolut. You always could. I don't understand. Every media organisation, you could always get them paid into, but it would not be as quick as getting them paid into an Irish IBAN.
It was actually the direct debits that was the problem, Greg, because if you have a Revolut card, as I have, as 2 million people in Ireland have, the kind of the IBAN number starts with LT44, mm-hmm. which is Lithuania. And some of the, you know, providers, some of the direct debit providers will not accept that. That was one of the problems. Okay.
Right, so the book is, because I just want to make sure when I speak to you I don't do a disservice, it is thick, and I presume the idea is being that any area of your finances that you have a question of or that you need some advice on, because I always start with the basics, John, and maybe our listeners who've listened to me and you and Sean in the past chat, they understand the basics, right? But it's always worth reminding, because I'm only starting to cop this stuff on myself, and I'm sure I'm quite normal.
Yes.
But it's for the starter, or for those that are looking
to
even...
Oh, you're frozen on me, Greg.
Yep, I should come back. But what I'm saying is the book... Can you hear me now, John? Can you hear me, John? Okay, I'll tell you. Yes, I have you back. Yeah, so what I was trying to say is that this starts from people from the basics down to the very first initial a bit of advice about budgeting, but it gets much, much deeper and answers an awful lot of questions, John. So tell us a bit more about what's in the book.
Okay, look, I'm a personal insolvency practitioner. So those people who are still in trouble from, you know, residual historical debts, they will still need, some of those will need to kind of go and see where can they find out about Personal Insolvency Act. Well, my book has a whole chapter on personal insolvency, and therefore I can't take that out of the book next year, because there'll be somebody who'll buy the book who wanted for that specific purpose. There'll be people who won the lotto. There'll be people who have got investments that they want to know about, and they want to find out, you know, what a pension is, for instance. We're on a pension time bomb, for instance, Greg, and I'm sure you're aware of it. And then we're supposed to be bringing in auto enrollment at the end of this year. It now apparently is not going to happen until 2024. And it's like 20 years too late. So again, you know, the book covers pensions. It covers, as I said, the A to Z of personal finance. No matter what you want, you can dip in and out. In fact, Gay Byrne, God rest him, he was one of the endorsements on the when he was alive, sadly. But he had a very nice endorsement, which he allowed me to print. And it was this is a terrific book, written in a very user-friendly way that you can dip in and out of. And the dip in and out of is the important part, because no one's going to... There's only one man I know who got it over a weekend and read it from cover to cover. I think he's mad. His name is Owen Harris. But I don't know why he read it from cover to cover over a weekend, but he did.
And there's a big group of people out there too, John, who are in a good job. Middle-incomers that are living comfortably-ish. They can absorb some of the rises that are there. You know what I mean? They're not going to... And they're thinking, right, okay, but how can I make sure that when I'm 65 or 67 that I have something to show for that? Do you know what I mean? Because often I think, and it's very important that we talk about those who are struggling to make ends meet, and we focus an awful lot on this program. But as I say, there is then quite a large group of people that could that could be setting themselves up for their future that are wasting money or not doing so correctly. And I think that's quite an important group of people that would this book would appeal to as well.
Absolutely, because it's as I said, it's actually back down to planning again, Greg. No matter, even if you have a huge surplus, you can plan, obviously, the third level education, no problem. But maybe you want to retire earlier than your normal, say, 65, 66, and you might want to retire at 50. I know several people who retired at 50, and the way they did it, they made sure that they were going to have enough money, enough income. Remember, income is your number one asset. If you don't have income, you're going to eventually run out of savings. So that's the key part, is the income. A lot of people, for instance, who would be really wealthy, have some really wealthy clients, and they live on the interest of their investments, and it's substantial. So they have to manage it, though, properly. And even, for instance, I'm sure you're aware of the thing called the Approved Retirement Funds, which is an ARF. It's a pension. Once you retire, you have the choice of either going the annuity route or the ARF route. And the ARF route is still something that you need to manage even after you've retired. Because I'll give you one instance of a lady who came into me 8 years ago. She put an investment of about 212. It was an AVC she had, 212,000. She then drew down 94,000 over the following 8 years. And that was, you know, between imputed distributions, that's the 4%. She was 65. When you hit 70, you've got to draw down 5%. And then there was annual management charges of about 1.5%. So 5.5% was coming out of that fund every year from day one. And then when she hit 70, 6.5%. So that 94,000 represents. So I asked her, how much do you think is left in your fund? And she said, about 130. I said, no, you've got 224,000 left in your fund, because she managed it. She put it into kind of aggressive but very successful funds and made more money than she actually was taking out.
What's the least you could invest that could make some material difference into the future? You know, say someone has 5 grand or 10 grand or 15 grand. Is that investable? Like, you know, you'll get offers of where people will say, you know, give it to us and we'll invest it in shares and we can, you know, there's no guarantees, but we might be able to deliver this, that and then. Like, you know, for people who have that amount of money sitting there, the interest rates in banks are not worth talking about at the moment, although improving. Like, you know, you talked of that lady who had a nice little nest egg of 200,000. But if someone is listening with 5, 10, 15, 20,000, can that be turned into anything?
Yes, it can. But you've got to bear in mind, think of Warren Buffett. He's 93 next May. And Warren Buffett had a great one line. He said, the stock market, which is the best asset class, by the way, of them all, better than property, better than, you know, deposits, obviously. You mentioned the Gallup recently. The Bank of Ireland, their regular saver account went from 0.25% to 0.75%. Still, as one model would say, not enough for me to get out of bed. But Warren Buffett, he said, the stock market is a mechanism for transferring wealth from the impatient to the patient. So if you have your 5,000 or your 10,000, don't think you're going to get rich quick. It's a long-term investment, any kind of stock market investment, minimum 5 years. Generally, when you go into a stock market investment, there's a penalty for withdrawing in the first 5 years on a reducing basis. So in the fifth year, it might be 1%. After 5 years, there are no penalties. So you need to have a long-term term or medium term view on the investment. You know, don't put money into a stock market investment and think that you're going to be rich next year. So it's like, and obviously, if you can do it on a regular basis, there is a brilliant thing called stock market regular saver accounts. And this is where you can save between 100 and maybe 250 a month into some of these managed funds. And some of them are doing extremely well. And if you put it away on a regular basis, in particular for, you know, people with children who want to save for that third level education, that would be the recommended fund.
Stick the children's allowance into it. Is that what you're saying?
No.
I know. I'm joking. I'm being facetious. Come here. Listen, as I say, we can only scratch the surface. The book's out now, Money Doctor 2023. And this book that I have includes the students.
And it's got its own index, Greg, as well. So if you do have kind of teenage children from 13 to 19, give the book to them every now and again and say, have a look at that.
But page 294 is something so simple. It's the Money Doctor Students' Monthly Budget, and it lists what they're likely to be spending on. And then you multiply it by 12, and that's how much money you need a year. Without something like this, it would be really hard to calculate. I know that sounds silly, but it's the basics that sometimes we need the wee bit of assistance on. John, thank you so much for your time. Best of luck with that book. Well, it's already doing well for you. You're considering a rerun or a reprint. So that's good to hear. Thanks, John.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Good morning. Take care. Nice to see you. 086 60 25,000 WhatsApps and texts. Oh, to have money to invest. Wouldn't it be nice? Lend me money, I'll invest it, and then if the investment's a success, I'll give you the money back. How's that? Rightio, you're welcome back to the show. A caller says, well, I did ask that question, actually. I have 10,000 to play with. Where's the best place to invest and get a good return? You got an answer for that. Can you ask the Money Doctor if there's any financial institution paying interest on savings? Bridget, that was also mentioned there as well. It's in terms of lodging money as an investment to earn interest seems to be a no-go at the moment. Lots of you reacting to Fiona talking about homework just before 10. Fiona's so right about homework. I left school early because I couldn't handle the homework. It left me with confidence issues my whole life. And when my own children started doing homework, there was a row and a fight every single night they had homework. And looking back, I still feel guilty about it. And when you look at it now, what was it all about? It's good for nothing. Well, don't feel guilty because you did your best at that time and there's not much else you can do other than your best. Oh my God, Greg, what a load of crap. We all done homework years ago. What are we turning our children into? Can't do this, they can't do that, etc. As it affects their brain. How did we survive? How can they grow a brain if they are pampered like this? I would have a slight concern and, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm not heading outside to get a Sally Rod or anything. I'm as soft as they come, but I just worry that there's a big, bad world out there. It really is a big, bad world out there. And I don't know, where do you learn or how do you learn as a young person the skills or the neck, I suppose, to survive in that? If it's like, well, don't do homework because it's too emotionally stressful on the child and, you know, there comes a point, and it comes really early, 17, 18, 19, as I was trying to say to Fiona there, where they head off to college. You know, do they know what an overdraft is, as we heard from John? Do they know how to budget? Do they know how to cook for themselves, feed themselves, talk to other people, deal with someone speaking to them angrily or in the street or something? You know, the way things can happen. How did the rest of us manage with homework, says this listener. Children now, as Greg says, don't go to bed until 11 o'clock at night. No homework means more time on their phones or tablets. And that's it, you know, as I say, I understand that like, if I'm tired this morning, right, it's possibly because I was sitting on my phone until 1 o'clock last night, as I wasn't, right? And then I'll get home and I'll be exhausted. And what will I be fit for in the evening? You know, like, if we're saying, oh, the kids are too tired at night, well, let's make sure they're going to bed at a good time first with no screen time. And then if they're still tired at night, go, right, well, maybe school's too tough. But if we're being a bit slack in the evenings and they go to bed when they want to, and we don't know really what time they go off their phones, and then they're going, I don't want to do my homework at night, and we're going, bloody schools. Is it the schools or is it us? I don't know. As I said, I just want us to have a broad conversation, right? I don't have a particular view on it, but I just want to open the conversation out because I feel to some extent what we're doing at the moment isn't working. A caller, though, believes homework is a complete waste of time, especially for primary school wanes. The pressure of getting homework done in the evenings when both parents are working brings such stress and tension into the house. Homework, especially for primary school children, is absolutely ridiculous. We appreciate your text there. Part of the problem with homework for younger children is that all the teaching methods used today have changed so much from when parents were at school, and sometimes we're doing more harm than good. Yeah, indeed. It's a tough one. Because they're looking for your help and you're not fit to help them. Right, you might be aware that Galway University Hospital has carried out the first robotic-guided coronary intervention in Ireland and the UK. The innovative procedure combines the benefits of coronary intervention with the precision of robotics, offering a range of benefits to patients. Now we are joined by Professor Vessel Sharif. Professor Vessel Sharif, a good morning to you. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. How are you?
I am good. And for our listeners, Professor is a consultant cardiologist at Galway University Hospital. Right. And this actually was a County Donegal man who became the first person to receive this new game-changing robotics technology used during heart surgery. So, Professor, what was actually done and what was the role of robotics in it?
Yeah, so I think, thank you for having me on the call. Robotic is a area that is growing quite fast outside medical healthcare. We see the use of robotics in automobile industry. You see where they bring a lot of precision, reproducibility, and replacing human skills. And it's all about scalability. We're seeing more and more use of robotics coming into medical healthcare. We have seen it being used in procedures around urological surgeries around the kidneys and prostate. And more lately, we're seeing its application in other areas such as heart. We've been using coronary stents and placing coronary balloons and stents in humans for a nearly 30, 40 years at this stage. But the robotics bring in an additional benefit where we can place these stents quite precisely into the blood vessels and help us accurately measure the length of the blockage. So therefore, you don't oversize or undersize, and it takes away that error out of the human eye.
Now, is the robotic element of this at the complete control of the surgeon, or is there any autonomy there?
Yeah, so I think it's a little bit remote, but not too far away from the patient. So the operator, which would be the cardiologist who sits outside the area where the surgical room is. So it's a control room, which is just beside it, and it's covered with glass. So you have complete visibility of the patient. The robotic arm is where the physician is supposed to be. And through this console, you can advance the wires and balloons and catheters into the coronary artery. So that's the actual innovation around it.
And Professor, theoretically, could this be done even more remotely? You know, I mean, I don't know if there would be any appetite or need for it, but theoretically, could the surgeon be in Dublin whilst this operation is taking place in Galway, for example, into the future? And do you anticipate that ever happening?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, because I think if you look outside the box, the biggest challenge is that patients from Letterkenny have to travel 4 hours to get to Galway, and they have to leave 4 a.m. to be here at 9 a.m. And then once they get their procedures, which may take 11 o'clock in the day or 1 o'clock, and then they have to recover for 2-3 hours, and then they have to go back on the ambulance for 4 hours. So I think it's quite a lot to take for the patients for the procedure. And one of the key things in this is the remote access. Now we have to be very safe about it, and we need to have the basic structures in place. You mean the operating rooms and staff that is adequately trained. But the surgeons can potentially be remote in Galway and do procedures in Sligo and Letterkenny. However, this needs more research and needs more investigation. And I think we are now working with the industry and Science Foundation Ireland to understand how can this remote possibility can be attained.
So, I mean, obviously, so I then theoretically, we could have a situation with the support team that someone in Letterkenny University Hospital could be potentially operated on by, like, someone from yourself based in Galway. How likely do you think that might be to happen And over what kind of a time frame? Because we're very early doors, Professor, and this is not something that's going to happen next week. We all accept that. And I also understand that you don't have a crystal ball, because a lot of things would have to align. There'd have to be the will as well as the way as well. But, I mean, do you think this is something for the future? And how far down the road do you think it might be before we see something like that?
I think it's too early to say, and I have to be honest about it. I think we have done... We have heard about cases being done in U.S. From one hospital to other over quite a lot of distance. There was some delay of a few milliseconds before you move the console or some knob on the console, and then it takes a couple of extra seconds before the wire and everything moves into that patient. So we have seen it happening in U.S. already. I think it's going to need optimization. You're looking at, by the time it's ready, anywhere between 5 to 10 years before it can be widely used. I think it needs more research. It needs to be very safely brought forward.
Is it measurable at this point, or maybe it's more opinion than something we can back up? Like, how will this change outcomes in terms of, you know, the robotics taking over a human element to this? And there's always a capacity for human error, as much as that's avoided, and it's probably incredibly rare, I'm sure. But how much more safer do you think certain elements of this surgery being done via robotics is than it being done solely at the hands of a human?
So I think that humans are very well trained. I think of course the humans is the best way to do it at the moment. The operating arm that is being brought in to bring more precision and potentially more speed into the procedure, and also reproducibility of the procedure. But if you look at a bigger country like U.S., you have centers that are very high volume, so there is very high skill sets. But then there will be some centers that will be low volume, and the skill sets will be quite low. But the idea is that robotic will bring and up the skill sets in low volume centers. So that's the whole beauty of it. I think from in terms of being able to do it remotely, I think robotics has made it will make it very safe. I'm pretty sure about it, but I think at the moment we are in the early phases of adoption, and it's going to take some time to know how safe or faster and what are the real benefits we're going to have from this therapy.
Yeah, caller says, what happens if the internet crashed during surgical procedure? Well, that's not an issue at the moment, but presumably if we ever get to a point, we could effectively have hospitals hardwired together. There's obviously always backups you can have. It's not at home whereby you have to switch the router off and on for 10 seconds. You know, I imagine if this progresses, the least of our worries might be maintaining a connection, because there are a million solutions to that.
Yeah.
So that's not something I'm sure we need to worry about. Now, stay with me, Professor, because Brendan McLaughlin is the Donegal man who had this operation done. Brendan, how are you keeping? How are you feeling?
Not too bad, great.
Brendan, how did this come about that you were the chosen one? Did they ask you in advance? I presume they did. And what kind of reassurances did you need, and how difficult was it a decision to make?
Well, I went down to Galway on November, and all the scans came down. And they told me then I needed a stent, and that they weren't going to do it that day. They were going to take me back on the 12th of December to do it. And it was this new robot thing. So I just went with it then, like.
So you didn't really have to make a decision as such?
No, they didn't. No, just they told me it was a robot, and I said, right, I'd prefer not to know till after it was done. Like, I was a bit nervous anyway, but no, everything went very well. Okay.
And how do you feel about being a history maker, Brendan? The first robotic guided coronary intervention was into Mr. McLaughlin's chest.
Don't really think too much about that one. Just all I wanted to get it done.
Yeah, you just take it. Sounds like to me, Brendan, you've took it all in your stride. And how are you feeling?
Good.
Good stuff. That's the main thing,
good,
isn't it?
No,
really?
Very good. There was no pain, no nothing. Like,
brilliant. Okay.
I didn't even know it until I told them it was finished.
Found
nothing. Like.
All right. Good stuff. And it was a success for you. Do you feel better for it?
I do, yeah. Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
All right, Brendan, keep it. Thanks very much. Good man. Fair play to you, Brendan McLaughlin. When do you think the next type of operation like this will be, Professor? Like, is this going to be factored in going forward, or was this a once-off and requires more analysis and investigation? Or what's the future hold, Professor, in the more short to medium term?
So I think it's about adoption. I think change is difficult to bring in any part of healthcare. I think we've done 3 cases already. They were done before Christmas. On the next Tuesday, we have 3 more cases. And then on the 7th of February, which is another Tuesday, we have another 3 cases. So I think we were talking to Brendan as to why he was picked. I think you need to look at very particular anatomy. You need to look at lesions, which are very straightforward, not complicated, something that can be done with robotic. You need to realize that we're all new to it and we're learning a new technology, a new way of doing things. So we wanted to pick patients who would be very suitable and safe for their outcome and for the staff to know that this can be done safely in our hospitals. So I think that's why people like Brendan were chosen. And I think we're being very selective as to who we choose. Based on anatomy, and then patients are given the information. And me, essentially, from patient's perspective, there is nothing different. It's just that it is a hybrid procedure, partially done by the cardiologist, partially done by the robotic arm.
Well, look, the reality is this is going to become the norm in the future. There's just no doubt about it, because that's the direction of traffic. What excites you most, Professor, finally, then, about this type of technology, robotics, merging with, you know, the human skill set in medicine? Like, is there something that you look to the future and go, wow, this is going to be awesome?
I think the future is quite exciting. I think what's exciting is that that we're at the very early stages of using robotics in cardiac interventions. I think the potential is that we'll be able to do more complicated, complex cases more reliably, reproducibly, and I think with information that we get from these robotics as well. Outside the coronary, you can look at structural heart cases. You can look at other interventions for high blood pressure, for heart failure. So I think there is a lot of potential to improve, and a lot of research and development is needed to get to that. So I'm very excited in seeing that that we're going to have machine learning and artificial algorithm coming more and more in use in healthcare.
All right, super stuff. Thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. That's Professor Sharif there, consultant cardiologist at Galway University Hospital. You're welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Good morning to Michael, Deirdre, Siobhan, Margaret, Marie, Donal and Rosemary, among those watching the show live, which you can do every day by going to our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland. Right, okay. As I mentioned earlier on in the show, we were informed that NowDoc is moving from its current location and is being relocated. And Councillor Michael McClafferty learnt the same information and joins us now. Good morning, Michael.
Morning, Greg.
Right, okay. So what is the circumstances of NowDoc's departure from their current premises? Go ahead.
Sorry, Greg. No, what I've learned at the moment this morning here, and there's more information actually starting to come there to speak. What I've learned this morning there at the moment, that staff were told yesterday evening, they weren't actually told, they got a text message yesterday evening from NowDoc Management, or the NowDoc Management Eye, that the premises has to be vacated. And the reason for this is that the lease has not been renewed. And now I've heard two things this morning. I've heard, first of all, that it's been vacated by the 31st of March. I've just heard in the last number of seconds before going on to speak to yourself there, another date of the 3rd of March. But either way, anyway, it seems to be happening in March. So the situation, Greg, is at the minute, the doctor, or the GP, the doctors in question, and the drivers in question, they are being moved, relocated up to the hub across from the Letterkenny Hospital in St. Connell's. And there, they have a place in there, seemingly, or they're getting a place. They're moving into there. And then, but as a consequence then, there's 60 or so staff then associated with NowDoc and so on down there across the ships. They have no confirmation of what's happening to them.
So we're talking about nurses, we're talking about administration, we're talking about call handlers. Cleaners. Where are they going to go?
there's no word what's happening to them. They don't know where they're going. They're left in the dark.
Well, the timing is a wee bit interesting then, so, because as I say, in the absence of a formal response, this is as CareDoc is reviewing the situation at the moment. One of the fears was is that no jobs would be lost, but people would be redistributed within the health service. It's kind of looking like what is part of the discussion document until such time as we hear otherwise.
Well, 110%, Greg, you're right. Until we hear confirmation, on the record confirmation, otherwise, from the HSE or now Dr. Hoover's going to stand over and give it, until we hear that, those staff don't know what's happening. We don't know what's happening. The county doesn't know what's happening. For example, what's happening at the moment now in another county, take for example Louth there, up that area, Louth, Drogheda, etc. What's happening there, there's no proper surgery at the minute. You go to see a GP of the day and you have two options, depending on what GPs, wherever they get. One of the options is going into a B&B, the other option is going into a hotel, and the B&B of the day or the hotel of the day is just a room that they book. It's not the same B&B, it's not the same hotel, I'm told, that you go back to all the time. It's just wherever the doctor gets booked at the time and he carries out the surgery and that. And that's the type of situation that we possibly could be facing here in Donegal, as we're all aware this last while as well, Greg, of the situation of things getting moved to Carlow. We seem to be very much following down the same trend now as the minute, as the Gards are doing at the minute, where there's going to be a central base down in Galway. Mm. And it's going to be, if CareDoc takes over, the same thing's going to happen here. I'm also led to believe it's going to happen here as well. If CareDoc gets to now to go ahead to take over, Greg, that you're going to be faced with one, possibly two GPs on a night to cover the whole entire of Donegal, the whole of Donegal, one to two GPs expected to cover the whole of Donegal, based from a phone service in Carlow. And as we learned as well, they're going to try and triage whatever they can. That means, obviously, trying to sort out whatever's wrong with you over the phone, which is impossible. No doubt that'll lead to Zoom through time, a Zoom call as well. I imagine I can envisage that coming up eventually as well. But this is not going to work. And this, to be honest with you, for a better word, this stinks this morning. This is cruel. It's underhanded. It's undermining. And it just comes at a very timely situation when Now Doc and all this has been talked about. And no doubt what's going to happen here now, Greg, these 60 staff won't be offered to relocate. But to where? Dublin, Cork, Limerick, wherever, within the health service
part. Well, we need to find out if, I mean, let's face it, CareDoc's already very heavily involved in NowDoc. They employed the GPs and all. The fear is that it would be a service operated out of vehicles, effectively GP in a car kind of a situation. People couldn't get in to see a doctor. People would be sicker over the weekend, have to wait to see their own GP if they get an appointment, or head up to the ED. We need more information. Okay, listen, thanks for helping us get that out. I appreciate it, Councillor. Councillor Michael McClafferty, I thought there was a recent meeting between HSE, NowDoc, CareDoc and public representatives. I'd be very interested to hear what actually was said at that meeting.